Her Bold Brave Her with Dr. Pam Peek.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode 557. Phew! Sweat on brow. That's a lot of chatting out there, and I am so blessed and thrilled by all of that, to say the least. Oh, my goodness gracious. Now, today, we're going to be talking about the truth, the raw truth, the transparent truth about what really goes on for women after the age of 50 with regard to fitness. Because all you have to do is hit TikTok and all you hear are lies and craziness. And what we're going to do is try to set the record straight and your expectations. With who? Well, with Deborah Atkinson. That's who. She's a founder of Flipping 50, and she's made it her absolute focus in life to be able to look at women over the age of 50 and talk about their fitness and talk about how they take care of themselves in terms of their body and training after 50, but realistically, not crazy. So that's what I think is so important. Now, she's a certified strength and conditioning coach, medical exercise specialist, and prior senior lecturer in kinesiology at ISU. And she's also the subject matter expert for the American Council on Exercise, my favorite people over there, little Cedric and all of his fun people. And she has written more books than I even know what to do with. And just look her up, for God's sake. And that's at DeborahAtkinson.com. And then your head will spin. Deborah, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Thank you so much. So great to be here.
All right. Now, Deborah, how the hell long have we known each other? I feel like we're aging together. Oh my gosh.
You know, we are. And you don't even know the first time. Gosh, and I'm trying to think about what was the first time. First, I was in the audience. You were on stage for at least one or two different times, keynoting somewhere.
Oh, for IDEA.
For IDEA and maybe for something else, but yes.
God knows.
Yes. And so I was like, I need to know her. I love her. And so lo and behold, then you wrote the foreword for one of my books.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And then I also joined you with one of your campaigns as well. And we had a absolutely really fun time with that too. And I absolutely had so much fun. But it's great to be with a kindred spirit. Someone who kind of gets it. And you look fantastic. And I was reading your last blog, and you were really being quite open about your age and the change-ups you're making to your own training. So here's what I'd like to do first. I want the Her Podcast audience to know you better. So how did you get into this whole exercise training thing in the first place? And then the second part of that question is, why women over 50?
Well, the first answer is purely by accident. So I went away to college to be a graphic designer. And somewhere between my senior year of high school ending and my freshman year of college beginning, I started walking for the first time ever. I was doing self-initiated exercise. And realized,
how cool.
I realized I liked it when nobody was telling me I had to run laps or do push-ups or sit-ups because I'd done something wrong in a sport. And I became actually a runner before I was at that college dorm. And in those first couple of years of graphic design, I realized graphic designers stay up all night and smoke and drink to get projects done. I don't belong here anymore. And so I stuck one foot in physical education at that point and left one foot in graphic design. And though I love art, it's a big part of my life still, I realized this is what I'm meant to do. I didn't realize I'm a teacher at heart, and I want people to feel the benefits that I felt when I chose it myself, and how I became a better student, a better daughter, a better friend because of what that exercise did for me. Not so much just the vanity looks, that's a bonus too, but it was everything else that it did for my life. I wanted to share that with somebody.
I think that that's so cool. And it also reinforces something I rant and rave about. And that is what I love to call talent stacking. And that is never just do one thing. Look at all the things you are. Just sit down. You know, what are you? You're a daughter, a sister, on and on and on. At the same time, maybe you started in down one path, in your case, graphic art, but you're still, art is still huge in your life. So that's cool. At the same time, fitness showed up. And then all these opportunities to be able to address a demographic that has always been left out. Hello, it's women over 50. So I love that. And you have so many talents, podcaster, writer, speaker, on and on. So I just encourage women of all ages to just try to talent stack as much as possible because it enriches your life. I think we need to toss out that idea that you just do one thing in life.
The worst thing, yeah. And so many women, I heard the other day, somebody so just cannot wait till retirement. And I just count my blessings that I've never felt that way. Like, I'm so interested in what's next. What will we do next? And not having to put it away because we're just down and kind of check that box and now it's over.
That's why I can't stand that word.
Yeah.
In my book, Fit to Live, I interviewed my dear friend Ken Cooper down in Texas. Mm-hmm. And when this whole issue, somehow the word retirement came up, and he stopped me. And he said in that beautiful Texas drawl, he said, Payam. He said, there's no such thing as retirement. And I said, well, what is there then? And he says, refirement. And he said, you just keep refiring it up every decade of life and just keep it rocking. Nothing ends. You have to live a life of meaning and purpose. At the age of 40, it may be different when you're 60. And that's good. You're growing, you're enhancing, you're doing all the great things you're supposed to be doing here. So I kind of love that. And so I put it in the book and it was like a big hit. I kind of grooved on that. Now, why women over 50 for you? You could have been doing kids. You could have been doing teenagers. There's so many demographics out there, pregnant women, whatever. Why did you choose women over 50?
Well, and I did all those others, by the way, for about 30 years. And to bring it back to me personally, so I'm the youngest of four kids. My mom was 38 when she had me, and that's cool. But in 64, that was not as cool. She was an older mom. And so I was raised with music from the 60s and the 70s. And she then remarried somebody 10 years older. So my parents were the age of everybody else's grandparents.
And, oh, wow.
Right? So I was doing research long before I knew I was doing research, but I was always given, as an undergrad, I was always given the older clientele, the alumni faculty to work with. And I was comfortable with them because I'd grown up with that, and they were comfortable with me. And then at some point, I was 49, and I realized I really want to help up-level the fitness industry. I think we had a little too much disparity. I wanted to be more proud to say I'm a member of this industry. And we still had some growing pains to really make sure we were sending the right message, changing people's lives, not confusing people. And I think we still have some room to grow there. But that is why, you know, I looked at, I'm going to leave. I left all safety and security. And I said, I'm going to help keep the good ones. We saw all these students going through kinesiology who would then later come back and say, will you write me another letter of recommendation? Not because they were getting a raise, but because they now know I've got to go get a real job because I don't want to sell and market myself. And they didn't know how. We didn't teach them, not in a certification and not in a degree. So they weren't prepared to go out there and really make a good living, which they deserve to do. And so I said, I'm going to help them learn how to do this and not feel sleazy and salesy because consumers want to find the good ones. And you can't if they don't know how to be found. And as soon as I did that, I realized I can't just be out there talking about sales. I have to be demonstrating what works. So I picked a niche and I looked back at who I'd worked with and realized it was the baby boomers talking the loudest, saying, my doctor is telling me, well, what do you expect? And accepting this is just part of the deal. This is part of what comes with menopause.
Just suck it up, ladies.
Right?
Right.
And so I said, there is something more here. They're not feeling good following guidelines and position statements, and I'm going to unpack this. And I discovered purely by accident, Pam, by starting my business online, I knew nothing about it, but I spent hours and hours in front of a computer instead of exercising and realized that when I did quality exercise, not quantity exercise, I was in far better shape than I had been probably the 30 years before.
Wow.
That's where it started.
Wow. So what do you see right now as the big challenges with women over 50? You've written such great books. You talk about practical tools and tips and techniques. And yet, there's a whole bunch of people not doing any of this.
That's right.
I would say the mass majority of women over the age of 50, if I can be so bold, all you have to do is go to an airport and sit there for a while and just get a little goosey gander. And my interest has always been not for the people who are the early adopters and the people who are already hitting the club and doing the thing. It's for everyone else who needs an awakening. Is that kind of where you are too?
I think it's where if you're in this industry and you don't care about that, I mean, we have to look really closely at what are we doing. I mean, this is my 42nd year, and I think the statistic has not improved. What are we doing?
We are not doing.
Yeah, right. And I think well-intentioned messages even get misconstrued and intimidate the people who need us the most. We've got to figure out why aren't people getting started. And we've got all this science now suggesting there are no non-responders. Everybody responds positively, no matter how old you are, no matter if you're in menopause, you're on HRT, you're not, doesn't matter. We can spare the muscle loss, we can gain muscle, we can get stronger, we can age better. But we still have to be doing it. We have to get started. And so we need to make it easier to begin. I think the change recently in the ACSM guidelines have been a direct message to health and fitness professionals to make it simpler. Make it simpler.
Yeah, and to take a chill, for crying out loud.
Right.
You know, you don't have to take your weights to failure anymore because it really, I mean, what's the point anyway? We're just happy if you pick up a weight, you know, I'm just saying. And I loved the way they began to approach all of this much more holistically, and it's more welcome. And it's been a while since we had ACSM guidelines. And so this is quite a step up. It's a level up that I find to be much more reasonable. But still, so look at all the slices. Let's unpack it a little bit, as you'd say.
Yeah.
The first thing is a woman right now, over the age of 50, it's likely that she's obese.
It's true.
Okay.
Yep.
It's likely. I didn't say she was, but it could be quite likely if you simply look at the statistics. And the statistics continue to show that by the year 2030, and somewhere between 2030, 2035, the majority of American adults will be obese. Because right now, I think women are about 42%, 43%. That's not great. And we're more obese than men in terms of just the numbers. And so the reason why I bring that up is it's one thing to look at yourself and go, you know, I should probably drop 10 pounds. You know, I should probably clean it up here a little bit, maybe 15, 20. What if you have 75 to 100 pounds? It's daunting to a lot of people, yet it's the average out there.
So
right?
True.
And so that's a very tough place to start from because you have to work through significant psychology which is, you know, I hate myself. How did I allow this to happen? I can go on for about an hour, but you kind of get the picture. Is shame, blame, guilt. And then you start feeling helpless, hopeless, defeated, and the whole thing implodes. And then next thing you do is you're reaching for comfort, which is our little friend, Mr. Food. And I'll let you know it ain't broccoli. So I think that one of the things I love, and Deborah, I'd love to get your thought on this, is I'm seeing in most of the industries with regard to lifestyle that everyone's encouraging small steps. I mean, like super small steps. Like, remember Atomic Habits and yeah, that book and all the rest of it. And just to almost prove to yourself that you can do something ludicrously small and make it stick. And then maybe build from that. I don't know. What do you think about that approach?
You want to know the truth? I have a little polarized feeling about that because I think we've tried that for so long. So I've been toying with this idea of sometimes for people, it's having a big goal, having a big stretch goal, and it may take a series of small habits, but I think someone has to have something meaningful enough that lights them up, that maybe scares them just a little in order to pull them forward when it's not convenient, because it's always going to get not convenient to do the exercise or take the step. So I'll throw that back at you. What do you think about that? A big goal for a lot of people gets them immediately thinking about themselves differently.
I felt very divided about that as well. And what I find is that as a physician, sometimes it takes being scared literally out of your chair when someone says something like, hey, you have really badass type 2 diabetes, and you're like 1 inch from having to use a needle. That's the deal. Same thing with heart disease. There's all these things that start happening and accruing, especially in people over the age of 50, where you get these little wake-up calls, and what are you going to do with that? Where are you with that? So do I like that approach? I mean, well, it's not like you deliberately planned it.
Right.
These things happen. And I've watched people change on a dime when they're faced with something like that. Sometimes it takes a really rough hospitalization. I remember one woman in particular, Betty Sweeney, and she was a trip. She was type 2 diabetic and obese and pretty much a mess. And she ended up in the ICU with sepsis. And she almost died. That's not a good thing. And she literally left the hospital, by the grace of God, she left the hospital, turned around, looked at it, literally leaving the hospital physically with her family. And she said, never again. And she turned around, walked right into an Anytime Fitness gym, and the rest is history. She went on to become the Guinness Book of World Records holder for the plank. And I was there. It was a trip and a half. And she just said, nope, never happening again. And she, all I do is I look up and I see that hospital. We're done. Now, when you're lucky, that happens, right? But when it comes to the big goal thing, here's something else that works. Competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, hey, I want to do my very first 5K. I want to learn to run.
Agree.
And first, you have to learn how to brisk walk. You can't run, really, when you're obese because you're killing your knees, and your knees are already hurting as it is. So you learn how to brisk walk, but before you even brisk walk, you walk. Can you walk a mile? How long does it take you? Time yourself. Just have a little metric to compare. How long does it take you to do 3 miles? Wow, okay. You're going to run that one day. It's called a 5K. And so now all of a sudden it's like, get your support system around you. Is there a women's running group where they take newbies and blah, blah? All these things, you're taking critical steps to get to that. And in that woman's mind, that 5K is a huge achievement, a magnanimous accomplishment. And that's all cool. I love that. But you know what it is people wait And I caution everyone, they wait for some great inspiration to hit them.
Yeah.
It's like you're just sitting there in your little chair doing your usual sedentary thing, and you're waiting for like God to talk to you. Like, get out of your chair, move. It's like, it's not going to happen. You have to make it happen. And you have to your point, I'm like also a nutcase when it comes to living a life of meaning and purpose. So I ask everyone to take 95 steps back. Ask yourself, whatever your age is, what gives your life meaning and purpose? Because if your answer was, yeah, I don't know, well, no wonder you're not going anywhere fast because you have no meaning and purpose. What do you think of that, Deborah?
I think that's absolutely true. And I think it's, I call it a cry why, right? When you're looking for what is your reason why that you're doing something, we are all leaving a legacy. It's do you like it or not? And who are you leaving it for, or what are you leaving it for? But I absolutely think purpose-driven life, we've got to get up in the morning and feel like this matters to something. And I think for a lot of women, it's got to be something bigger than themselves, because it's where it hits us at home when we're thinking of our purpose. We are such givers and service-oriented humans that we thrive with that. And I also think it's, by the way, it's, if you're listening, it's great if it's for yourself and you selfishly have this goal that you want to do. But I think for a lot of women, you may need to tap into what is this greater good that I'm doing and what legacy am I leaving? Because you may not think you're leaving one, but we are.
I just absolutely love that. And another thing that is tattooed to my brain is for life, being of service. Just being of service. It could be a stranger. It could be a group of 20 who came to you and are asking you for guidance. It could be all the stuff that you do in your work and that I do in mine. We're being of service. I love that feeling. If I could make one person see the light each day of my life through my teaching and the rest of it, then, you know, I've achieved a huge goal in my mind. It doesn't have to be throngs. It's just trying to get to that place of readiness. Are they ready? And people sometimes just inchworm toward it. And that's fine. That's perfectly fine. I have no problem with that. But don't ever fall for the fallacy of, I'm just waiting to be inspired. I'm waiting for motivation. Honey, it ain't happening. What's happening is you're reading stories and that's all good. And you hear about people and whatever. But what's actually hitting home deep inside you? What's resonating? And there goes the rub. If you don't have meaning and purpose in your life, you can't get off first base. Quite frankly, why get up in the morning? So just keep that in mind. Do some homework, self-reflection, and ask yourself those questions. And if you're not quite sure, explore. You're an adventurer in your own life. Figure out what it's going to be one way or the other. I just love that. Now, when we come back, I'm going to ask you, Deborah, about you, because you brought up some great stuff in your last blog that I read, all about your own adaptations and adjustments in life at your age. Oh boy. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, SolarAe's got your back. And we're back. All right, Deborah, what's it like being in your body now? You know, you've spent decades doing your work as a fitness professional, but you're discovering things that where you have to adapt and adjust and you have to change up a little bit. Tell us about that. What's it like living now? Let's share your age.
62.
There you go.
Yeah.
And so 62 is really important right now because so many people, all these influencers and the Gwyneth Paltrow people in their 50s and all the rest of it, so many people are now transitioning from 50 to 60. And I think that they're looking at this like a never, never land, like, what is this place? And what am I to expect? So did you have surprises about your own body? I mean, you are a fitness professional.
I've had a few for sure. And I think my biggest wake-up call happened at 56. I hit menopause that year, but I also hit, am I allowed to swear here? I hit a shit storm that year. And I'm not alone. You know, serendipity, I think, happens to a lot of women. Right at that point, we're in this perfect storm of midlife and life is throwing you curveballs from all directions. And so my menopausal year was a little more tumultuous than I would have liked it to be, but I was training for something big. I was training for an Ironman. And that is not necessarily a hormone-centric philosophy that I would dedicate any other woman to do.
I would never recommend this.
I knew better. And yet it's every once in a while you break the rules because you think, well, I think I've skirted by. This isn't going to happen to me. And sure enough, we reach a tipping point at some point in our lives. And that was mine. So that was a wake-up call that no longer could I just pick and choose the things that I wanted to. I needed to think about it a little bit differently. It's not just my muscles and my joints. Can they do this? But it's how about my cortisol level and my endocrine system? Does it want to do this? And am I going to be able to manage my blood sugar levels? And what about my sleep? And where's that going to come in? So all of those changes, really, it was such a great learning lesson. You know, I would not have wished it on myself, but I got to experience that. And now I had greater empathy for other women going through it. But I think now they say the 5-year period post-menopause can be a big wake-up call. A lot of little changes in the gift that keeps giving continues to be with you. So I've noticed a little, you know, I've had stem cell in one knee, not because it was hurting, but because actually I'm kind of looking preventatively at in 20 years, I want to still be choosing what I want to do. And so I'm going to do something now about this if I'm starting to feel it. So yet to be determined if that's going to come to fruition. But, you know, I just was asked, we've just passed a holiday. I was just asked, are you going to do another Ironman? And I said, you know, well, above the shoulders really wants to, below the shoulders, I think is saying no. No, you don't really want to do this. And I come back to why. I know I can. I've done it before. I don't have anything to prove. And I feel more fit now than potentially when I was training for that kind of huge endurance. There's an exhaustion that comes that you conveniently forget about when you're thinking about all the good memories that you've got. And so there's a part of me that still mourns giving that up. But I found other things I love that I would not have had I kept dedicating all that
like
time
what?
And energy. I absolutely love hiking. And I've fallen in love again with walking, which is how it all began, which is a very cool thing. Just the ability to be out in nature, regardless of the temperature. We try to get out every day. I've got a dog, so it's a built-in, and I'm grateful for that to get me out the door. But walking is wonderful. I'm coming back to playing a little bit more golf, getting in the pool a little bit more, just spending a lot more time strength training. And I don't mean lots of time and volume, but it's a higher priority for me. And it is what's keeping, it's the glue keeping it all together, really, is the way I think of the resistance training is the key.
I don't think there's any question that muscles are the longevity organ when you really get down to it. But I love what you just said, because you're listening to your body. And there's a word for that. It's interoception. Some people are very interoceptive. They know how every square inch of their body feels. Other people are kind of like, uh-uh, you're not that connected. And it's a different experience. But I'm very interoceptive. And so are you. And I think most fitness professionals are. They have to be in multiple levels. I hung up my marathon shoes after I ran Boston the year before the bomb. And it was the hottest Boston in its 116-year history. Thank you very much. And I do believe I am the direct descendant of camels, because I was like, that's a little hot out here. It was 92 degrees.
Ooh.
No one should have been running. But, you know, like, we'll leave that to the leadership of the Boston Marathon. But anyway, suffice it to say that, you know, I had a little conversation with my body that kind of went like this. No, we're not doing this to ourselves again. We've had a wonderful run of it, and that's good. That's when I actually pivoted to triathlon. And I never had an interest in doing Ironman because I'm not a natural born runner. Actually, I have no business doing endurance. I'm built as a sprinter, and I'm a very fast sprinter, but sprint training is absolutely filled with injury. I mean, you just pop your Achilles, you mess your calf up and on and on. And so, oh well. But so for me, I like the Olympic distance. It's very comfortable. And then I started thinking about other things as I've been working with women over 50, right? Someone walks up to them and says, here's your DEXA scan. And it shows that your bones, which is very normal, are actually thinning, right? That there's a trajectory with bone mineral density that begins at the age of 30. And you can mitigate the rapidity with which you drop bone mineral density by doing strength training, keeping up with the calcium, vitamin D, and staying physically active. And that's all good. And not doing crazy things like over-consuming alcohol, smoking, all the terrible things that will hurt your bones. So then the women are told when they're 50s, like, oh, look at this. Yeah, a little bone thinning here. And that's okay. It's called osteopenia. The job is not to hit osteoporosis if it's humanly possible. But even if you do, there's plenty you can do. No question about it. But then women get afraid.
Yeah.
Afraid of falling. And so I know a ton of women who stop cycling because if they fell, they would break a hip in their mind.
Yeah.
And many of them remember mom or grandma or some woman in their life who really did not have a picnic when she fractured things. So there's a fear factor.
Yeah, huge.
That starts showing up. Have you seen that, Deborah?
Absolutely. And I started 1995. I first started educating. I remember teaching distinctly an adult education course because it was the first night I'd left my infant son at home with dad, and we had to paint the picture and tell people what osteoporosis was. We had to help them imagine what was going on and define it. And back then, the recommendations for exercise were so conservative. It was like, you know, you could do this to prevent, but as soon as you have it, we're going to bubble wrap you, you know, and I think for a lot of women who are now in their 50s and 60s and 70s, they're still in that. That's what I learned about osteoporosis, and I'm carrying that with me. And so I have to be really careful and cautious, even though I maybe have done vigorous, active exercise life till yesterday, but I got my results today. So all of a sudden, I'm going to stop doing what I've earned the right to do. That drives me crazy, actually. And I think we've still got some doctors who are also equally conservative, kind of contributing to that, suggesting that they slow down or stop doing. So yeah, I would love every listener to know you're not fragile. We've seen studies come out saying that women who are postmenopausal with osteoporosis actually do handle high impact and heavy lifting. Not that everybody should rush right out and do that, but they do handle it with low injury rates. And other things work too, by the way. Light and moderate work as well, up to a point. So I'd love every woman to know you're not as fragile as you think. We have never seen really an injury occur in exercise.
I think that some women confuse fragile with frail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Frail is a place you never, ever, if it's humanly possible, want to deliberately go because there's no coming back. That's one of the few things I could say as a physician. Most of the time, I'm very hopeful and like, oh, we can turn this sucker around. Frailty is a whole different ballgame. That's difficulty getting out of a chair. You can't do it without assistance. This is why we do the sit to stand tests all the time. Test yourself. And so I've been trying to educate as best I can, like you, Deborah, that you're very strong. And what you have to do is be strategically cautious.
Right.
That's the way I started doing it. It's like, you know, because I had the same feeling. You know, I have osteopenia and I've always had iron bones. I was very, very fortunate. And at the time of menopause, I was like, ruh-roh, what happened here? And that's by the grace of God when I was placed on estrogen. I really, knock on wood, I had very few symptoms of menopause. Don't hurt me, all these little haters out there. but I never walked in a room like cracked a sweat or it was weird. But it turns out my mother was the same way. I think there's a very strong genetic component. However, that being said, I saw my energy decline and there was some of that brain fog going on. So everything for me was energy and brain. Everything else was like, nah, I'm fine, whatever. And the estrogen has been incredible. And it also reversed the downward trend on my T-scores for my DEXA scans for my bone. And now the Menopause Society, which used to be called the North American Menopause Society, is now recommending estrogen vis-a-vis a patch usually to women who are candidates for that. Some women are not, breast cancer, et cetera. But it turns out it's really quite phenomenal. So I've had an estrogen patch since dinosaurs ruled the earth. and have you ever tried? We now call it menopause hormonal therapy.
Yes.
MHT. We don't call it HRT anymore.
Yes. Yes. So I'm a user. Yes. So there's that.
I don't know. Could you rephrase that, please?
It's a family show.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. She's on estrogen.
Yes. Right.
She does estrogen.
Yeah. And there is considerable research to show the connection between estrogen and bone density is very clear, that the results that you'll get are far better with bone density if you are doing resistance training and on HRT.
Well, see, there you go.
Then if you're not.
So you've got to have the HRT and the, don't be thinking for 1 second, girlfriends, that you could just slap a patch on and call it a day.
Yeah.
What you need is the ability to be able to get yourself off the floor if you fall and no one else is around to help you. Okay. We call it a push-up. And literally watch someone get off the floor all by themselves. They're pushing themselves up, right?
Amen.
And all you have to do is learn to do that. Even if you begin to practice doing that against the wall. And Deborah has addressed this in her beautiful work a lot. And I rant and rave about it, of course. But what I'm saying is the biggest message that Deborah and I have thus far is that resistance training is the way. That's the way. That's why when I did my book, Body for Life for Women, Remember when that came out? It was the most interesting thing because I was the first woman physician on a cover of a book wearing an exercise, you know, like a sweat outfit with a stethoscope around my neck. And it never happened before. And I gave everyone permission, please, hello, lift weights. Consider your muscles your new best friends, little BFFs there, because this is the way. This is the way. Now, there's one other thing, Deborah. I discovered as I was aging, and I was told this by coaches and stuff. When I did the triathlon, I remember I'm sitting there swimming in the middle of a lake. Could we discuss this some other time? I'm just kind of busy here. I don't want to kill myself. And my coach is in a canoe and she's just like Chatty Cathy. And I'm like, you know, I'm trying to get across the lake. And she said, I got to tell you something. If you're going to be a triathlete, you need 9 hours of sleep. I said, what? And at that time, I was in my late 50s. And I said, wow. And she says, yeah, we call it recovery. and that whole issue of recovery. Oh, Deborah, I'm so bad at it. Oh. I was so bad. You know, it's sort of like you just hammer yourself. It's like recovery, oh, waste of time.
Women. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I mean, even you and I who have more knowledge about this stuff, it's like, and then I discovered she was absolutely correct. And I began to be like a recovery maven. I would sit back and I would just say, if I'm going to do X, then Y. And then I got something to tell you. As you get older, if you try to break that rule, you had like a monster workout that day and you're feeling so good and all the rest of it and back and forth, right?
Yeah.
All right. What happens the next day is your body says, leave me the hell alone. Okay. You're allowed to take walks today. Okay. Stretch. That's good. Okay. Do some of those little things that you do on your mat and whatever. And don't you even think about anything intense. Because if you do, I will slap you upside the head. And I didn't believe it at the beginning. And then I looked at my aura readings. Here's my little aura.
Yeah. Right?
And what I would find is that my heart rate would plummet in the middle of the night, which means that I was overstressed. And my heart rate variability would go straight to hell. And that's a indication of how adaptable your heart is to stress and stimulation. And you want to have as high a number as you can. So I looked at that and I thought, what the heck? And so then I experimented and I actually did something radical. I listened to my body. And that next night, as I was doing a beautiful day of recovery, the aura readings all self-corrected. It was fantastic. So I needed a damn $400 digital thing to slap me upside right. the head and remind me that at my age, I need to really respect. I need to respect recovery. And that's a message for all of you out there. I know. If you're young, you're like, oh my God. And, you know, you're just doing your thing and you're going to break, you're going to kind of hack it a little bit. But I'm just warning you, once you hit 50 and above, it's like, oh, it's a game changer. Now, there's one other thing, too, that you and I both know. In the seventh decade of life, which is when you're in it right now, you're entering it, Deborah. Now, you're entering it the ideal way. Because in the seventh decade of life, everyone, I don't care who the hell you are, you're going to drop some lean body mass. That's age-related. There are some things in life that are truly age-related. So many things that we think are age-related are actually related to disuse.
True.
But this is actually something we've watched in Olympians and masters athletes. And it's one of the reasons why as you age, you can't possibly be keeping up the same performance times that you did when you were 50, now that you're 65 and whatever. So what I really want everyone to do is bank your body, okay? Bank a lot of muscle as best you can. And Deborah, you're absolutely, I mean, one of the great models of how you do this kind of thing in the first place. And that's why it's such a pleasure to sit here, talk to a kindred spirit, because we have to live this. So you bank it so that when you do drop it somewhat, it's like, you know.
Had it.
It's a nothing burger. It's like, okay, so my time on my run or whatever is down a little. It's like, chalk it up to your age and age-related changes. But guess what? You're still out there kicking ass, okay? Does that make sense, Deborah?
Completely. And I think no matter what age we are, women notoriously, recovery is probably one of the most underused components of fitness. We discount it and we got away with it. But like you said, we don't have that lateral flow anymore. We got to keep it between the navigational buoys. We got to pay attention to the recovery, definitely. But I totally agree. I think banking the muscle is so very important. And then even in what we just said, two sentences put together, somebody will hear that and say, well, I need to lift more then, right? But it's, we need to prioritize it, yes, but we also have to prioritize the recovery in between, because the exercise provides the opportunity for fitness, but the fitness really occurs between, during the rest and recovery.
Yep. There's no question about it. So living in your body right now, Deborah, does it feel different than it was 10 years ago?
It's okay if she's sitting. So when she starts to move, a little bit different, yes, but different, not worse, just different.
I feel the same way. It's a different, I don't know, my body, I have body parts talking to me that have been quiet for years. Oh my goodness gracious. And I'm like, wow. Then I look it up. Is this normal? You know, call on my orthopedic friends, like, what's up with this? And they go, and then they have to preface everything, well, as we age. And I'm like, shut up. Shut up right. Right now. I know where you're going with this. I think that's actually true, Deborah. We feel different. But if you're fit and you're doing your best to be as fit as possible, meaning just it's all relative to you, then it's a good feeling. It's just a different good feeling. Your body is adapting to a new decade in your life.
So
isn't
great.
That cool?
It is very cool. I think you've got, you know, we can't really separate the mind and the body and the soul. And we have this wisdom now that I think we're willing to listen. We can get quiet enough and not have to fill that space and really listen to what do I need? What's going on? How does this feel? And use it as data. I think we can get curious easier than we can maybe earlier in our lives. We were more judgmental. So curiosity is a great thing.
I absolutely love it. Deborah, tell everyone how they can learn more about you and your services.
So we are at flipping50.com, all words spelled out, flipping50TV on social media if you go there. And we now have the Flipping 50, the Stronger Way app.
Fantastic. And what do you get with that app? What do you learn?
Right now, that is our entire membership. So we are really kind of pivoting with everyone, and the longevity fitness scorecard is the first stop. So we'd love to have you do all the at-home tests, test your balance, the sit and stand, test them regularly and look at where are you compared to norms, knowing you don't want to be normal, you want to be excellent. And we're raising the bar. And then come back and you've got all the pieces there so you can improve on your agility or your stability or your power with the tools that are there, and then keep testing. So we want to change the way we all age, and we want to change history right now.
I love it. I just think that that's so fantastic. And I just have to say kudos to you for your decades of work and slugging it out and staying with it and learning so much. And using yourself as a role model, because what's wonderful is some 62-year-old woman's looking at you and listening to you and saying, you know, there's so much truth in what she's, and she's sounding so authentic. There's none of this 20-year-old ponytailed fitness professional jumping up and down. It's like, no, you said it yourself, Deborah. You're now wise, and you've got many decades under your belt to be able to say that you're in a position to guide wisely and strategically and cautiously so that women have a welcoming place when they say, hey, I want to get fit. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense, and I thank you very much for that.
So what's your last word of inspiration to people? When I say inspiration, if some woman is out there and she's saying to herself, I don't know, I'm a train wreck.
Just one step. We've talked about big goals, but take one step. One step and ask, will it make me feel better or make me feel worse? Make the right choice.
I love it. Okay, you and I are the one step people. No question about it. Deborah, this has been nothing but pure joy for me to reunite with one of my dear, dear fitness professional sisterhood members. And just keep on doing what you're doing. I so thoroughly enjoy reading your stuff and listening to you. You're awesome. So thank you, Deborah.
Thank you so much for all the work you're doing.
And one more time with your website.
Flipping50.com.
Flipping50, that's 50.com. Thank you, Deborah. And now I want to thank my sponsor, Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs Rooted in Nature, and the new Her Life Stages products. Please run on over to solaray.com and scope them all out. And now take a moment to leave a review, because we just sit around waiting to hear from you. That's what we do. We love to hear from you. Everyone, this has been a production of Podcast Health. And remember, your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So everyone, get on out there, seize the day, a little carpe diem. Thanks for listening.